Holly R. from Doylestown.
Hi, everybody. My name is Holly, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Holly.
I really hate speaking, and I started to stress about this a couple weeks ago because this is the one meeting that I prayed I'd never be asked to speak at. And until today, when it hit me, you know, it's not about me, and it happens to me every time I go to speak. I get all stressed out, and then I think, and then I realize that it's not about me. It's about, I'm just a vehicle to carry this message. I'm just here to share my experience, strength, and hope, and what God has done for me and AA. So so that takes a lot of the pressure off me. So my sobriety date is February 23rd, 1988. I have a sponsor. I sponsor women. I've gone through all the steps several times. I continuously go to meetings and work this program to the best of my ability. It always hasn't been the case all 27 years of my sobriety. It's been an up and down road. It really has. It's been quite a journey. But so I'll start out what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I have to start out with talking about, I just had a really painful childhood. And I don't say that because that's the reason I'm an alcoholic, but that was my reason to drink. That was I really grabbed a hold of and embraced my sad childhood and being a victim. So as a kid, I was pretty messed up. I was just really lost. And I remember the first drink I picked up, maybe I was 13, and, just had a little bit of everything in my mom's liquor cabinet because she marked all the bottles. So I made sure that, you know, I drank a little bit of everything, a little cream de menthe, a little whiskey, a little vodka, a little, you know, tequila, whatever. And I got very, very sick and blacked out and threw up all over myself. And, you know, it was really quite lovely. So my friends had to, you know, take my clothes off, throw me in the bath, you know, the whole thing. And it was humiliating, but it didn't stop me from drinking. And I never even thought of that, you know, that might be a problem or anything of it. So I started doing other things as well. There's, you know, that sprinkled throughout my sobriety. I'll keep it to alcohol because that was, you know, what took me down in the end. But whatever was in front of me is what, you know, whatever's going to take me out of my head, okay, let's go. So I had a lot of geographical changes. I moved around a lot, as a kid, moved around a lot as, you know, a young adult. So like I said, I was kind of a mess as a kid, and my family would get together and have these little powwows in the kitchen. And, the conversation was always, what do we do about Holly? And, the driving force of my life, like the question of what do I do about me? What's wrong? I couldn't figure it out. I just thought I was a mess. And so they, I went to live with my aunt and uncle when I was like 16. And because I just couldn't handle living with my mother and my stepfather, I blamed them for everything. I blame my family for everything. And really, I was a pain in the ass kid. But I didn't see that for the longest time. So I moved in with my aunt and my uncle at 16 and immediately went to a psychiatrist because, you know, they were going to, you know, I had to figure out what was wrong with me. So I spent 2 years going to a psychiatrist. The first time I went, I just cried the whole time. And spent 2 years there, you know, kind of got myself together a little bit, and then thought I was fixed, and I went off to college, and I really wanted to make sure that I did well in college and kind of stayed away from the partying, and that lasted maybe a week. And my roommates decided that I needed to be initiated with peppermint schnapps, and so that night I went to every single party on campus and got to know, you know, people were saying hello to me the next day that I had no idea who they were. So that was really started my, that was the whole focus of college for me, was just partying. And it got so bad that I wouldn't get up, you know, towards the end, I wouldn't get up and go to class. I partying before tests and then wouldn't take the tests. And anyway, I failed out of college after, I think, a year and a half, maybe a year. And I was just devastated. I couldn't figure out like how to live like everybody else lived. You know, how to manage my life, how to get up and do what I was supposed to do every day. And, you know, then it was college, later it was a job. I couldn't figure out how to hold down a job, and you know, so I remember that pain of you know, every time I would fail like that, like, what is wrong with me, and why can't I just be like normal people? And I had like an enormous amount of grief inside of me, but I also had an enormous amount of rage inside of me, and that combination, when I would drink, was you know, who knows what would happen. So anyway, failed out of college, got a job, you know, so I was away from my partying friends. And this was like kind of a pattern for me. I would move somewhere and I wouldn't drink as much because I wouldn't know anybody. And then I'd get to know people and started partying. And, you know, so anyway, that's what happened. So I started drinking more and more. And kind of thought, well, maybe this is a problem. But I was living with a guy, my boyfriend in college, who really had a problem. And I thought, he's an alcoholic, but I'm not. You know, he's the problem. You know, before it was my family, now he's the problem. So, excuse me. And it was just insane, our relationship, how we lived. You know, I would come home one night, and I remember giving him a black eye because, I don't know, he pissed me off about something. And, you know, one day we're driving around down the road, and, you know, I was asking him for the rent money, and he backhanded me and split my lip and going to the emergency room and, you know, taking all his clothes, getting pissed off at him and throwing them in the backyard. It was just, it was insane. And we just fed off each other, and we got crazier and crazier and crazier. And I felt like I was losing my mind. I remember just feeling like, I remember I was living down the shore at the time. I remember walking on the beach and just thinking and just praying, you know, God, please send me somebody to help me. I don't know how to get out of this. I was just in so much despair and so hopeless, thinking my life was always going to be like this. I was never going to figure out what was wrong with me. And carrying around all this grief all the time and rage, like I said. So I remember calling my aunt and uncle and telling them I had to get away from him because he was the problem. So I called my aunt and uncle and said, can I come and live with you? And they said, yeah. So I packed up all my things, drove up there. And when I got there, I told them, I think I have a drinking problem. I think. And they said, okay, well, don't drink. I said, okay. So, you know, that worked for a little while because I didn't get a job. You know, I didn't have any friends. And so then I got a job and friends, and the partying started up again. And, you know, and each time it was worse. each time it was like a little crazier. And I remember the feeling before I would drink every once in a while, or you know, probably more and more often as I progressed, the feeling of feeling really crazy and knowing that I don't know where I'm going to end up tonight, and a little terrified and a little like I don't give a shit kind of feeling. And I would do things over and over again when I was drinking that was really unlike me and that would humiliate me, you know, the next day. My friends would tell me what I did, or I'd walk into where I was working and nobody would talk to me because of what I did the night before. So, and that really tortured me, that I would do these things. And I would feel such horrible shame and guilt and remorse. And that was really most of my bottom. I was, you know, 23 when I first came in, so I didn't have anything to lose. So it was really that I lost myself and that I was such a mess and I was so hopeless and, you know, at such a young age. So I remember going to a meeting when I was going to live with this guy because I was living with my aunt and uncle, and they were really getting tired of me. They would talk to me about my drinking, and I just couldn't control it. So I knew that there was going to come a point soon that they were going to ask me to leave, and I knew I wouldn't be able to live on my own. I couldn't hold down a job. I couldn't, you know, do all the things that I had to do to live by myself. So I was dating this guy, and that's the reason I went to an AA meeting, because I didn't want to mess that up. So went to an AA meeting, and I talked a little bit, but I didn't take it seriously at all. I was just kind of checking it out. I was around 21 at the time. Stayed sober for about a month. And another attempt at like, okay, I can do this. I'm not going to drink. And then within a few weeks, I don't know how long, I would be drinking again. And I was kind of a binge drinker. I would go like every 3 days and drink. And, I never got to the point where I drank every day. I just didn't think of it. You know, I'd had these violent hangovers, and I would wait till I would feel better to drink again, or wait out the guilt, shame, and remorse and then drink again. So then I was living with this guy, and of course he was getting tired of me and you know, caught on to you know, what I was really like. And he started talking to me about my drinking. Again, I knew I wouldn't be able to live on my own, so to make him happy, I went to meetings. I went to a meeting. And at the time, I was really tired of my life. I was tired of, not going anywhere. I saw, like, the rest of my life, and it was just, you know, I didn't have a good job. I, you know, lived in an apartment. I had nothing. So I didn't want my life to be like that. So I wanted to clean up my life. I didn't want to change me. I just wanted my circumstances to get better. So I think I went to, I don't know, a couple of meetings, and I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew at this point that I was an alcoholic and that I couldn't drink. And I went back to school and got a good job. Bought a house, got the car, all the stuff. So I looked good to, you know, the rest of the world. And inside I was dying because I hadn't changed anything about me. And one night I was with my friends at a work function, and they all knew that I was an alcoholic. And an obsession hit. And there was no way that I wasn't going to drink. I remember that feeling of, you know, didn't matter who or what, had to be hurt or stood in my way, I was drinking and nobody was stopping me. And so I drank that night, and at some point I realized that I was in trouble, even as I was drinking. And I took off the next day and I went to a meeting, and I was shaking and I was terrified at this point, because I knew that I couldn't control this, that I couldn't stop myself. And I was really scared. And some woman next to me started talking to me, and I just started crying. And I cried for 6 months every time I shared. And every meeting I went to, I shared and I cried. And so I just didn't think it would work for me, because I never completed anything in my life. I was never successful at anything in my life. So I just didn't think this would work. But I just kept coming back because I really had nowhere else to go. And I just got a little bit of hope at that first AA meeting. And I met my sponsor the first day that I went to that meeting, and she took me to Living Grim, because she said, you know, it'd probably be a good idea for you to go to rehab. And I didn't go to rehab because my mother was getting married in like 2 weeks, and I didn't want to mess up her wedding. So I didn't go to a rehab, but I really thought that I wouldn't stay sober if I didn't do that. So I went to see an addictions counselor twice a week and went to meetings every day. And I couldn't work. I was just a mess. I just had these anxiety attacks that were horrible, and I was just a mess, just an emotional wreck. And so I just went to meetings every day, and the addictions counselor, and I just every meeting I would just something somebody would say would give me a little bit of hope that maybe I can do it. And I remember, you know, and they told, I got sober at a clubhouse, and they told me to get my hand up every meeting and share what was going on with me. So I did that. And they were deadly serious at this clubhouse. They talked about how it was life and death, and you know, bang their hands on the table and screaming and yelling, and talked about that you needed to be honest, and that if you weren't honest, you weren't going to make it. And I was brutally honest. That was one thing that I think, you know, saved me, is that I was just really honest. I wasn't afraid to be honest, because I didn't have, you know, it just all came out. I remember being at meetings, and this just garbage would just spew out of me. I just had to get it out. It was just, you know, I was, and I would feel better after I did that. And I was always in crisis. You know, there was always something going on in my life that was a mess that I had to talk about. And, you know, they'd say, well, just, you know, stay sober, you know, work your program. Yeah, but what do I do about this? And when do I feel better? And, you know, all these questions, and just couldn't take it one day at a time. I didn't get that. I wanted everything fixed now. And so I started to work the steps. And I would notice that one day, I don't know, after a few months, that I hadn't cried in a week, or I hadn't. The biggest thing was I hadn't humiliated myself in like a month, and I thought that was a miracle. And for me, that was a miracle. And so I thought, well, maybe this might work for me. And I really worked my ass off. I just jumped into AA. I sponsored women, went through the steps. I took commitments, and I was just had a passion for this program. I was just on fire. I loved AA. I continue to love AA. And I still have that fire and that gratitude of that it saved my life. Let's see. I think about 5 years sober, I decided that, and I don't really know how it happened, but I decided that And I see this happen a lot with people now. It's pretty common that I was just too busy for AA. I needed to go back off my meetings, and I needed to put more energy into my career. And I, you know, I had a son, and I had the, got the house, and this, and you know, I was just very busy. So I started to slack off my meetings, and you know, at first it didn't affect me, you know, because I was back in control again. And but I didn't know this. I was driving the bus. I was running the show. I was, you know, the big book talks about the actor. Rearranging everything, and slowly, I think over a 10-year period, I went to less and less meetings, and I got sicker and sicker, but I didn't notice it, and I didn't know what was wrong with me again. I had forgotten that I was an alcoholic, and I forgot that I needed to live a spiritual program every single day, and that that it doesn't work. I thought I was done. I thought I was just, you know, done with AA. I did that. I did the steps. Now we're just like maintaining. I wanted to just kind of coast in AA. And it took about 10 years. At 15 years sober, I really got crazy. And I had an affair and acted out just like I was drinking. You know, staying out till 2 in the morning and, you know, just craziness, just insanity. And I couldn't talk about that for the longest time, but I don't have shame about that now. I don't think it's okay. I wish it hadn't happened, but I don't carry that today. I, you know, made amends to my ex. And so I really think that, like, that shame keeps us sick, and it kept me sick. And I couldn't talk about it in the rooms. I couldn't talk about it to other women. And I beat the hell out of myself for a long, long time. Well, anyway, so that behavior, and then, you know, I started catching myself lying, which I didn't do. I mean, I really prided myself on being rigorously honest. And I would catch myself lying, and it was just kind of like, well, okay, it was a little lie. All these things didn't add up. And I remember going to meetings and saying, you know, something's wrong. I'm, you know, not feeling good. I'm just off. But I wasn't doing the steps. I wasn't giving this back. I wasn't, you know, really involved. So I kept talking about it. And then at 20 years sober, at 15 years sober, when I had the affair and I went through a divorce and all that stuff, I got back into AA, but I just went to meetings all the time. That's all I did. I didn't get in the program, didn't live a spiritual life. So at 20 years, I was really sick again, just mentally sick. I was in this really, really high stress job and blaming everybody else. And, you know, in my boss's office every day, like, this guy's doing this and this one's doing that, and just insane about what everybody else was doing. But I was taking a look at me. And it got to the point where I had to leave my job. I just had to leave because I was coming home every night and just falling apart. And my husband said to me, we can't live like this. You got to do something. So I left, and I was devastated. I was devastated because my ego was so tied up in that career. And I put that as my God. I put that in front of God. Like, that was the most important thing in my life. And when that was taken away, I just really fell apart. And I really started to think, like, maybe I need to drink again to get this. And because I just couldn't figure it out again. I just couldn't get there. And I couldn't find that passion, that spirituality that I had when I first came in. So, but I kept searching. And then I found a Big Book study meeting. And I remember the first time I went into one of these meetings, and, you know, it was very different from the AA that I knew. And I had a lot of judgment about it the first meeting. I thought, you know, who the hell are these people, you know, like talking about this shit and like really judging other meetings. And I heard a lot of judgment and a lot of stuff that was really new to me that I didn't understand. But there was something inside of me that said, you got to keep coming back. So I kept coming back because I was embarrassed that I didn't know the Big Book as well as these people did. And I had like 22 years sober. So I kept coming back because I really wanted to know what was in that book. And I wanted to know what these people, they were all lit up about. So I kept coming back and I got into the book and I, you know, and that was it, that like I got on fire again and I found the answer. And it was all in that book. So, you know, I really got into action again and I really started to kick up my program put this first. And I've been through so many things in sobriety that I've put in front of my program, and it's always been disastrous. But I had to learn the hard way. I really did. I couldn't learn through just like people telling me, well, that's not a good idea. I had to do it and then fail and pick myself up and I had to try it my way for a lot of years. And for a long time, I was so upset that I wasted so much time in my sobriety trying to run the show. But it was the best, lesson I could have ever learned, because I get it now that I can't run the show. That I need to turn my will and my life over to God on a daily basis. I need to work this program. I need to be working with others. And I have to do that. That as soon as I start going off the course a little bit, you know, because it's, for me, it's a constant correction, going off course and then coming back and then off and coming back. And I know what it feels like to go off course. I know it, you know, within days of going off course. So I know what it feels like. I know when my disease talks to me. And, you know, today my disease sounds like, you have 27 years, you really shouldn't be thinking like that. Or you have 27 years, you really shouldn't say stuff like that in meetings. Or you should really be better than this. That's my disease. I know it. I'm not perfect. I just work my program to the best of my ability every day. And I've learned a lot of hard lessons, and I'm very grateful for them, because I can share them with sponsees that have walked down the same path or are walking down the same path that I did or am. So it was really invaluable for me to learn a lot of that, you know, doing it the hard way, trying to do it my way. Oh my God, I'm never going to talk for an hour. So I love this program. I owe my life to this program. I grew up in this program. It's my foundation of life. It's, you know, where I go, you know, when I'm happy, because where I go when I'm sad, it's where I go when I'm, you know, everything. I just come here. And somehow it all gets worked out. And every time I go to a meeting, I get my priorities straight. I realize that no matter what's going on in my life, no matter how bad it looks, I'm sober today. And that's a miracle. And I am so much different than who I was. I couldn't stand that Holly couldn't look her in the eye. I couldn't stand to be in my own skin. It was a horrible feeling. And I don't feel that way today at all. So it's not about how well I am today, because when I try to look good or sound good or, you know, that's another hole that I can dig. It's about how far I've come. And I always need to be reminded of that. And that's what AA meetings are about for me today. You know, it's about reminding me of where I came from, because I can forget very easily. And it's also about giving back. And that was another thing that I didn't do. You know, there was some points in the steps that I got stuck. I got stuck at after 5, I got stuck. And then, you know, doing 8 and 9, I got stuck. And then the 12th step, I got stuck. You know, I really didn't think I could give anything to anybody else. I didn't think I had anything to give to anybody else. And I just, I didn't want to fail. I didn't want to, you know, I just didn't want to go there. And, you know, of course I would ask, I would sponsor women that asked me, but I would not actively seek out women to help. And that's been the biggest change in, that has turned everything around for me, that 12th step. And that's so powerful for me that, that it's not about me, that it's about getting out of my own way and helping somebody else and sharing my message with somebody else. And it's such an honor today for these women let me into their lives, and they let me into their, you know, deepest, darkest secrets, and they trust me. And that just, it really humbles me. It really, it's such a powerful connection. And I fall in love with these women. I see, like, how amazing they are behind this disease. And it's, and they always teach me more than I could ever teach them. And they give me more than I could ever give them. And I'm so grateful for them. I'm not real good at, like, going up to people. And, you know, I've really struggled with my place in AA for so long, because I'm not this, like, incredible speaker. I'm not this person that goes up to people and, hey, you know, let me take you through the steps. Like, I tried that approach. That doesn't work. Although I love to take people through the steps, like, you know, but it's hi, my name is Holly, you know, how are you, get to know you, all that stuff. So, you know, I'm more, you know, so I need to kind of not, like, women get kind of, they back off a little bit when I come on too strong, and really that's not me. So even though I want to help so badly and hate to see people struggling and love to take women through these steps. And I just, I finally found, like, you know, how to do that. And I love to do prison work. I love to go into the prisons to bring the message, because early in my sobriety, I was brought there. And it was very powerful for me to see that there's no difference between me and them, and that they're, by the grace of God, go I, and that I could just as easily be sitting there, or at some point in the future be sitting there. And so I just I love doing the prison commitments. They're so grateful to come in, and when, you know, we come in and bring a meeting in. And just a real quick plug for the prisons. They really need help. It's there are just not a lot of volunteers going in, not a lot of people hosting or bringing speakers in. So they really, really need help. So that's been, you know, one of the biggest ways that I serve. And, you know, I never got before that it's about service. That my life is not about me anymore. that my life is about serving in AA and outside of AA. And, you know, that made all the difference in the world, you know, because I was always held myself back, held myself kind of distant from everybody else. And that just didn't work. So it's been an amazing journey, and I'm still learning and changing and growing and doing these steps and falling down and uncovering character defects. And that's another thing that I used to be ashamed of my character defects. You know, when you go through the fourth and your fifth and you uncover all this stuff, and I used to be really ashamed of all that. And, I'm not anymore. I've come to peace with my character defects, and not that I like them. I don't like them. I just, I've made peace with them. It's not a source of humiliation, or it's, you know, I just continue to work on them and ask God to remove them, you know, if he sees fit to do so. And the biggest thing also is that I'm the problem. You know, I am asked all the time through my sobriety when I contact my sponsor, you know, this is what's going on, and, you know, this is what's driving me crazy today, and what's your part in it? So that's become kind of automatic to look for my part and to know that I'm usually the problem. And that used to really annoy the hell out of me. Like, why can't somebody else be the problem for once? You know, like, I would go to my sponsor and say, you know, my husband's driving me crazy. And she would say, go to a meeting and your husband will get better. And I'd be like, why can't he be at fault? Like, I just wanted him to be at fault once in a while. And, but I'm okay with that today, that, you know, that I need to work on me. And that's the only way anything's going to change. And that's the way everything changes, when I look at me and I don't look at you. And so there's been a lot of just amazing things that have happened in AA. And I'm so glad I came in here. It felt like home, my first meeting. You know, the first minute I walked in the door, I just felt like I was safe, and that, and it was a very crazy clubhouse that I got sober at. So, and they were all, you know, a little nuts, and I just felt very safe because I felt very nuts myself. And so it's really been a journey. And, you know, I don't have all the answers. That's why I have a sponsor. That's why I go to her and tell her what's going on. And if I have a problem with somebody, she'll, you know, I either need to forgive them or, you know, make an amends and move on. And it's just that simple. Not easy, but it's just that simple. So you know, there's a way to solve all my problems, like the big book says. And, you know, I really struggled with, I felt like I was lost in AA too. I felt like there was these middle of the road solution meetings that a lot of people call them, that drives me nuts. And then there was the big book meetings. And I felt like I didn't fit either place, because my experience is not coming in and learning this book, and, you know, that's how I got sober and doing the steps through the book. And I struggle with going back to those meetings because it's, you know, sometimes it's not about recovery, and I believe that it needs to be about recovery, and I believe that AA meetings need to be like a pep rally. You know, we're sober, and we need to celebrate that, and you know, give that to the newcomer, and let them see that you know, we have hope here. And so, you know, I tried to sponsor women from the big book kind of method that I've learned after being in sobriety for so long, in AA for so long. And that's just not my experience. So I can't, and that's okay. I sponsor people from my experience. And, you know, I take the best from both worlds, and I try not to judge either world. And I believe that 90 and 90 is a good thing. I really do. Because until you get through the steps, you know, you need to get some relief at a meeting. That's what I tell the women I sponsor. And until you get through those steps and get a spiritual awakening, getting to a meeting every day helps. And, you know, all those things that that I was taught really helped me. And so I don't need to be ashamed about believing in those things, and I don't need to reject what I've learned from the big book. I need to be honest about my experience and live the message that I have. And it's nobody else's message. It's my message, and I don't have another one. This is it. So I really believe that, you know, I need to be honest about that. And that was my latest thing that I really struggled with. And I seem to have come to terms with that. And but I love the book. I just... I can't get enough of it. I can't get enough of going to meetings where we break down the big book and talk about it and discuss it. And, you know, what do you think about it? And what do you think about it? And I love getting new ideas. But I also need to go back to the clubhouse where there's somebody new coming in and try to help and keep my mouth shut about, you know, because sometimes it's better to keep my mouth shut and because I've gotten beat up there, you know, like kind of talk to, like, you know, you need a different message kind of thing. So I, you know, I can keep my mouth shut, you know, I don't mean not talk about what I believe in, but maybe not shove it down somebody's throat or beat them over the head with it, because I really need to be effective. And being judgmental is not effective. And I've learned that as well. And beating people over the head isn't effective because they're not going to listen to you. And when they're ready, that's great. You know, and really, like, my thing is, you know, if it's working for you, if your program's working for you, that's great. And you're happy and content and living a spiritual life, that's awesome. If it's not working for you, then, you know, there's some other things to try. And I really try not to judge, you know, people or meetings or because I can really judge my way out of AA. Also, I just wanted to say one other thing that it just went out of my head. I love that AA is so important to people that they will argue and scream and yell and they're so passionate about this program, about this book and how to do it this way and that way and that's not right and this is right. I love that because it's just you're on fire with it and you know, be passionate about it and have your convictions. I found that every time I have a conviction and this is the way to do it and I preach that and I go on and on about it, then next week I discover that's wrong. So I try not to do that. And I also learned that whatever I judge comes knocking on my door. And I don't want to knock it on my door. So I really try to pay attention to that. And, you know, I have a life beyond my wildest dreams today. Absolutely. Well, I didn't dream this. I really didn't. I didn't dream of, like, I don't know, a house in suburbia with a child, you know, well, he's 21 now, but I didn't think I would have kids. I didn't think I'd be married. I didn't think I'd, you know, like, be like other people. I really didn't. Didn't know that I wanted to be. So this isn't something that I would have imagined for myself, but it's just an amazing life. It really is. To be at peace is more than I could have ever asked for. It's all I ever wanted. I just want to be at peace, because when I first came in, my head used to torture me. Just constant, like, chatter and screaming and, you know, horrible things. And it was like, this is going to sound crazy, but it was like this movie started. This, like, horrible horror show started in my head, and I was unable to stop it. I was just on for the ride, and I can't even explain it. And my head does not torture me today, not like that. You know, I get upset about things, of course, but it's nowhere near what it used to be like. It was really horrible. So to have peace today is the greatest gift. It really is. Just to be able to sleep at night and you know, and get up and go to work every day. Well, I don't work now, but, you know, when I did. And, you know, to be able to not have all that bedevilments. You know, I had every single one of them, you know, that couldn't control my emotional nature. That was my big one. I don't have that anymore. And, you know, all the promises have come true for me and then some. And, you know, and I'm not saying that, like, every day it's, you know, perfect. But when I look at where I came from, it's amazing that I have this life. I don't know how I got here some days. And I'm always grateful. I'm always grateful for my sobriety. I really believe in gratitude and being grateful for the food on my table, the roof over my head, for heat, for, you know, everything. Because, you know, if I don't remember and I'm not grateful for that, then I don't know how you can be happy if you're not grateful for what you have. So I really try to remember that. And this is just all stuff that was taught to me, you know, by these amazing women that I saw on the program that were just these powerful women that I thought I could never be like them. And I wanted what they had. And they all had a very robust spiritual life. That's what they all had in common. And that's what really, you know, got me inspired and passionate, you know, finding my higher power and what that means to me and what that looks like and how that changes. And that's just been an awesome road. It was like I lived in a two-dimensional world before, and then I got sober and I'm living in a three-dimensional world, and I'm looking around like, oh my God, I had no idea, like, my potential and how good my life can be, and that it's only limited by me. I'm the only one that can stop me. But it's a process. It's, you know, like when I first got sober, I couldn't, I was constantly, over and over again, I was just, doing things that would sabotage myself. And I was just so sick that I just, it just took me a long time to get better. And I, you know, I used to hate that word when people would say, you know, it just takes time. It just takes time. It just takes time. You know, and I'd say when, and I don't know when I stopped saying when. Maybe that's when I got better, when I stopped saying when. But I think I spoke long enough. So thank you, everyone, for listening.